Now, let's drop down to verse 31. Thou, O king, sawest, and behold, a great image. This great image, whose brightness was excellent, stood before thee, and the form thereof was terrible. That is, it excited terror. It was awe-inspiring. I would say that it had glamour, if you please. It reveals that which was very glamorous. It was terrific, was stupendous. Those adjectives we use a great deal today. Now, Daniel begins to describe the dream Nebuchadnezzar had had. I wish that I could have been there and have seen the expression on Nebuchadnezzar's face change from cynicism to unconcealed amazement. And when he began to say, you saw a great image, the brightness of it was terrific, was stupendous. I think that the eyes of Nebuchadnezzar lighted up. He shifted to the edge of his throne and he said, boy, that's it. You are starting right. And so he begins to move. And now in this land of idolatry, such a vision was the only language that Nebuchadnezzar could truly understand, because this place of Babylon was known as the fountainhead of pagan religion, and it was the womb of heathen idols. Now, verse 32 and 33 in the second chapter of Daniel, and I'm reading this. This image's head was of fine gold, his breast and his arms of silver, his belly and his thighs of brass, his legs of iron, and his feet part of iron and part of clay. And I think that when Daniel said that, again, this king says, boy, you are right. Now he's prepared to listen to the interpretation. Now let's say a word about this. First of all, I'd like to give you a quotation from Tregellis relative to this. He says concerning this image, and I'm quoting now, here all is presented as set before the king according to his ability of apprehension, the external and visible things being shown as man might regard them. As we have said, God speaking to him in the language that he can understand. Now, this tremendous image that's before him, it just stands there. No movement at all. It's just awe-inspiring. It's glamorous. It's terrific. It's stupendous. Oh, by the way, I said that before, didn't I? But may I say that's what it was. Now, the head was of gold, the breast and arms of silver, the belly and thighs are brass, and the legs are iron, and the feet were of iron and clay mixed together. Now, the image, therefore, consisted of a very strange assortment of metals. It was not an alloy of metals, but was multi-metallic image of four metals plus a silicon, that is sand, that is clay. And it's easily described, as we've said here. Now, let's take another look here, and I'm going to move on down and read a little bit more, because we're going to be talking about this image now. It's very important. It's one of the very important parts of prophecy. I'm reading now verses 34 and 35. Thou sawest, till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon his feet that were of iron and clay, and brake them to pieces. Then was the iron, the clay, the brass, the silver, and the gold broken to pieces together. And it came like the chaff of the summer threshing floor. The wind carried them away, that no place was found for them. And the stone that smote the image became a great mountain and filled the whole earth. Now, we'll get to the interpretation later on. And we're going to let Daniel give the interpretation, because we don't need to guess at it at all. But the thing to note here is, as Nebuchadnezzar in his dream beheld the image in awe and wonder, a stone coming from beyond the environs of the image and without human origin or motivation, smote the image on the feet of iron and clay with such force that all the metals were pulverized. And the wind blew the dust of the image away so that it entirely disappeared. And the stone, however, began to grow as a living stone, and it filled the whole world and took the place of this image. That's very important now to see, and we'll get to the interpretation that's given to us.